And this is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. It was 150 years ago today that the nation was torn apart with a war, the third day raging at Gettysburg. Today was the day that Pickett's Charge took place. And so the nation was at war with itself. The issue was slavery, whether southern states had the right to break away from the Union in order to preserve it. Texas was a slave state and part of the rebellious Confederacy. And in Texas, there were five major battles during the Civil War, all of them on the coast, two in Galveston, two at Sabine Pass, and one near Brownsville. No battles in San Antonio, but the Civil War was almost started here, some say, at the Alamo with General Twiggs' surrender. And during the war, the city was frequently panic-stricken under martial law. There were hangings and road blockades in fear of a Yankee invasion. We are going to be talking about the Battle of Gettysburg and what happened 150 years ago today and the impact of the war, the Civil War, on Texas. Here in the studio to talk about that, we have Professor of History John Huddleston. He's from Shiner University. Welcome, Professor.
Nice to be here.
And we have Kelly Knauer. She is of Time Life Books. She's the editor of Gettysburg Turning Point. He is the editor of the Gettysburg Turning Point of the Civil War. Kelly, you there?
I am right here. Happy to be here, David.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. And we invite our phone calls. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. What are your thoughts about the Civil War? Are you a proud Southerner? You want the South to rise again? Or, you know, what are your thoughts of the Civil War? Are you proud of your ancestors and their role in the Civil War? You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And, Kelly, let me ask you, so what was happening today, 150 years ago, at Gettysburg?
Well, it's a good question, and you know, it's a little chilling to think about it, but exactly as we are now speaking right now, Pickett's Charge was taking place. It took Longstreet a while. This was under General Longstreet, who was Lee's number two man, and his men went into position early in the morning. They were in position to make an uphill assault up Cemetery Ridge to the south of Gettysburg as of about 9 a.m., But there was a huge artillery battle first. So these men were crouching down. They were lying on the ground. They were taking cover while there was this incredible artillery battle. And the Union was slightly winning the artillery battle, but what the Union really wanted was to entice the Confederates to charge, because the Union had a terrific fortified position on top of Cemetery Hill. And Robert E. Lee's guys were going to go uphill in this really pretty rugged ground. They were going to go uphill against a heavily fortified position, and this was not a very wise maneuver, quite frankly. And Longstreet, the number two man, argued vehemently. He and Lee usually got along great, but they argued that morning. And when it came time for the charge, Longstreet couldn't even give a verbal assent to launch the charge. But Pickett said, "Should we attack now?" And Longstreet just nodded his head. But at any rate, they're having this terrific artillery barrage. Lasted for about an hour and a half, and the Union played a great trick, a classic military gambit. They let their guns fall silent on purpose to let the Confederates think that they had won the artillery duel and had knocked out all the Union batteries. And it worked, and the Confederates thought, oh boy, we knocked out the Union batteries, now's our chance to attack. So they launched the attack about, we think, around 3:30 p.m., 12,000 men, lined up in a classic, kind of a Napoleon Bonaparte scene, if you will, with the flags and the everything flying and the drums rolling, and they start marching up this hill, and the Yankees let them get pretty far up that hill, and then they opened fire, and they had plenty of artillery left, and they just pretty much mowed the Confederates down. And Longstreet was right; it was really debatable whether Lee should have launched that attack in the first place.
And this was a turning point in the war. How?
Very much a turning point. Well, I think you have to go back to why Lee was up in Pennsylvania, of all places, to begin with. Lee had been really kind of in a defensive posture most of the war. Most of the big battles had taken place in Virginia on Confederate soil. And by the summer of 1863, even though the Confederates had won most of those battles and actually had won them pretty convincingly, there was no pasture left for the horses in northern Virginia. The silos were empty, the granaries were empty, the cupboard was bare. And Lee says they had just won a huge victory at Chancellorsville. The Confederates had won a great victory. And Lee said, while we've got the impetus of this victory going and we got the Union rocked back a little bit on their heels, let's head north. And we will feed our soldiers, we will feed our horses, and frankly, he launched this invasion. This is not Normandy. He launched the invasion not knowing whether he would get in a major battle with the Union, not knowing where the place of that battle would be. He just headed north to cause trouble and defeat his men. And you have to remember, this is a battle for perception as much as anything else. And Lee's audience was the big anti-war faction in the North. There was a huge anti-war faction in the North. A lot of people forget this, but Lincoln was fighting all through the war just to retain his coalition. So all these anti-war people in the North, if Lee could win a major battle, he would really put a lot more pressure on Lincoln to reach a political settlement. And Lee's other audience was Britain and France. They were really, the Confederates were desperate to prove that they were an independent nation, not just a bunch of breakaway rebels, which is how Lincoln was portraying them. And they were hoping they could get the Union into a big battle, beat them in a big battle, and win a great diplomatic and political victory, and maybe the British and French would come on and join their side. And, of course, they got whipped very badly and barely escaped. You know, if the Union weren't so lazy as they often were in the war, if the Union had followed up on their victory at Gettysburg, they could have destroyed Lee's whole army. But in typical fashion, Lee was allowed to escape back across the rivers and back into Virginia and lived on to fight another, 18 to 20 months of just brutal carnage in the remainder of the war.
So this was, if the South had won the Battle of Gettysburg, then yes. Lee would have won an important psychological victory.
Very, very much so. He would have really threatened Lincoln. He would have really buttressed the anti-war movement in the North. He may well have
won
the support of Britain and France.
He might have forced Lincoln to go to the diplomatic table to negotiate.
Yeah, he might have. And yes, they kept sending peace envoys to the North, and Lincoln refused to meet with them. But in this case, you know, if they'd won a big victory, Lincoln might have been forced to negotiate. That was the plan, at any rate. And you know, once Lee had his army up there and all the way through Maryland, mind you, all the way through Maryland and into Pennsylvania, he was determined to have another big battle with the North. He knew this was his last shot. It's a big gamble. You know, you might call it Lee's last gamble. It was a big gamble to head north, and he wanted to force the issue. He didn't have to order Pickett's charge today. You know, he didn't have to do that at all. He could have withdrawn from the battlefield and found another place to fight. But he ordered this uphill charge that really, frankly, turned into a slaughter. And that was the end of any kind of Confederate offensive in the war, in that theater, I should say.
Right, and then the battle went back to the South. And
the battles pretty much went back to the South. And actually, that was pretty much the end of fighting in 1863. Meade, George Meade, who was the general who had been appointed, this poor guy, was appointed to lead the Army of the Potomac at Gettysburg only 3 days before the battle began. He was not even present the first day of battle at Gettysburg. He got there that night about 1 a.m. in the morning. And this poor guy, he tried him out a few more offensives. They didn't come to much at the end of in the fall of 1863.
All right.
And it was when Grant came in the next March of 1864, that's when they really began to
fight. We're going to follow up on that. We want to talk about how the war was felt in Texas. We're going to go to a quick break. If you've got questions and comments about the Civil War, give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. We're talking about the Civil War. 150 years ago, Texas was part of the Confederacy. It was also at Gettysburg. It was Hood's brigade. It was there at Gettysburg and took severe losses. Texas was part, you know, battles were fought here. It was certainly felt here in Texas. We want to hear what you have to say about the Civil War. If you have family relatives, they have passed down stories to you about how they were impacted by it, give us a call, 614-8980. With me in the studio, Professor of History John Huddleston of Shiner University. So what was happening in Texas during the Civil War?
Texas was not a primary area of interest. Certainly, the focus of the Civil War was in the East. Texas provided about 200,000 soldiers that fought over in the Eastern Theater War with Joseph Johnston and Robert E. Lee. But here in Texas, there was activity along the coast. Certainly, there were major battles, as you acknowledged earlier, at Galveston, with the Union taking Galveston and then the Confederates retaking the island January 1, 1863, but Texas is really a secondary source of concern for the Union. General Nathaniel Banks, operating out of New Orleans, attempted on several occasions to subjugate Texas, trying, as you noted, an abortive invasion at Sabine Pass, then taking over South Texas, Brazos de Santiago and Brownsville, and trying to work his way up the coast. But there was very little physical fighting in Texas. A lot of the fighting involved dissident Unionist versus Confederates, certainly at the first of the war. The founding father of my university, Charles Schreiner, was one whose family came from Alsace in France, and the Schreiners came over to, migrated to the New World, San Antonio, before the war. Dr. Schreiner, Charles Schreiner's father, died very quickly, had an unfortunate close encounter with a rattlesnake in San Antonio that took his life when Charles was about 14. This is about mid-1850s. So Charles Schreiner was a very young man when the Civil War started. But he was a German freethinker. And many German freethinkers were opposed to slavery, and they were opposed to secession. I live, my Kerrville in Kerr County is in the center, of course, near San Antonio, center of the state. And along with Kendall and Gillespie County, Kerr County was a center of anti-union activity. There were other areas in North Texas, in the North Texas counties along the Red River, and over in East Texas, among the Italians in the Brazos Valley. Those folks were immigrants, and they didn't have much use for either slavery or secession. And many a family of Germans were conflicted and divided in their loyalties, as a matter of record. Amy Schreiner, Charles Schreiner's brother, was one of those distant Germans who were killed at the Battle of the Nueces as many Germans attempted to flee to Mexico, and they were hunted down by Confederate troops.
And they were thought to be sympathetic to the Union.
Right. They were part of most of those who were killed at the Battle of the Nueces near Corpus Christi were...
Some call it a battle, some call it a massacre.
Yeah, were members of the Union Loyal League. And the Union Loyal League was ordered disbanded, and right. The assumption was that Confederate authorities had given dissident Germans 30 days to leave the state. But I'd say about 30 to 40 Germans left Kerr County, headed south on horseback in August of 1862, and assuming that they had 30 days of time to clear the state, and unfortunately Confederate troops hunted them down, and indeed it was a massacre, with several wounded Germans executed by the Confederate troops.
All right, I'm going to go to the phones. We do have some callers who wants to jump in on this. Michael is standing by. Michael, welcome to The Source.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
While your interviewee is certainly correct as to what the reasons for the invasion of Pennsylvania, let us not forget that also one of the reasons why Lee wanted to go into Northern Territory was to relieve the siege at Vicksburg, which was going on for 60 days, and culminating in that the first 3 days of July, and Lee wanted to relieve those troops as well, and hopefully divert a good portion of Grant's troops that were laying siege to Vicksburg, because Vicksburg was the last key port in the Mississippi River, and when it fell, basically it tore the South in two.
All right, Michael, that's a great observation, and is that pretty much correct, Professor Huddleston?
Unfortunately, Lee didn't realize that the Vicksburg garrison was being slowly but surely starved into submission, and that that they were preparing to, the Confederates at Vicksburg were preparing on the 4th to surrender on the 4th of July, as they did. So, but your caller is correct that that Gettysburg was not just the pivotal battle of the war. You have to also add Vicksburg, because closing the Mississippi River essentially split the Confederacy in two using the old Roman theory of divide and conquer.
Now, let me ask you, I've heard stories about a Twigg surrender at the Alamo, General Twigg, and how had he not surrendered, and how there was actually the Union at the time, the United States forces at the Alamo had fired on the militia members of Texas, that actually could have been where the Civil War started instead of Fort Sumter.
My understanding is that General Twiggs was confronted by the Confederate Committee on Public Safety and asked to surrender Union forces. He was unsure about what he wanted to do. He attempted to get some direction from Union, his leaders in Washington, and was incapable and decided it was best that he surrender his forces. But 20% of the Union Army was located in Texas and surrendered without a shot being fired. And certainly Twiggs, within about 10 days or so, was drummed out of the United States service.
And he joined the Confederacy.
But was not active, not an active officer, but he certainly was castigated for surrendering such a large percentage of Union troops.
And this was all leading up to the Civil War, when both sides were trying to figure out who was going to fire the first shot. And Lincoln was hoping that the South would do it so he could rally the Northern forces into, we need to put down this rebellion.
Well, I think that's that certainly I would agree with you that Lincoln didn't want to be the aggressor. Lincoln had, of course, was not well liked by those who supported the institution of slavery in the South. But many it's of significance that the United States Supreme Court justices, many of whom were Southerners, remained at their posts during the Civil War and did not surrender and did not join the Confederacy. And as a result, Lincoln reached out through the Supreme Court justices to Jefferson Davis, acknowledging that he was going to resupply Fort Sumter, but with humanitarian goods, non-military items, etc. In fact, Lincoln was hoping that Jefferson Davis would become the aggressor, and therefore, in the tradition of America, we tend to want to have the other guy shoot first so that we can vindictively respond.
Back to the phones. Russell joins the conversation. Russell, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, gentlemen. My question is that I'm currently a student attending a college here in Texas, and it seems like every time that we teach history through the wars, it's all about the tactics and the major battles, but very little is focused on what pushed people to take up arms. So I'm wondering more about the political campaign to get both sides to want to get into an uproar to take up arms against somebody that they didn't even know, and how much was that of just saving face for the people in charge so that they could continue on with their political power and that type of political maneuvering versus actually getting people to want to take up arms for a just cause.
Okay, Russell. So what was the motivation behind the war? Was slavery really top of mind?
Many folks in the South suggested that the Civil War was a rich man's battle fought by poor Southern whites who did not necessarily support, nor did the poor Southern white own, many of them owned slaves. And your caller is correct that many studies of Civil War focus not so much on the motivations and what caused the break between the North and the South, but focus on battle tactics. The split between the North and the South started starting with the Mexican War and the decision of bringing in huge amounts of land from excess from Mexico, and
which would be slave states, which would be free states.
Right.
The South was afraid of so many free states becoming, and they would have a majority in the Senate, and they could end slavery immediately.
Right.
And then Lincoln, when he was elected president, he wasn't trying to end slavery, but he was trying to end the expansion of slavery.
Right. Many people assumed that the Civil War was fought and started to end the institution of slavery. The Civil War was fought over the question of what would be the status of slavery in those in those lands taken as a result of the Mexican War.
And then
War.
It was about fighting to restore the Union.
Right.
One more caller. I'm going to go to David. David, welcome to The Source.
Hi.
if you're going to talk about the Germans in Kendall, Kerr, and Gillespie counties, I think you should comment a little bit about the reign of terror that was imposed on the Germans. A lot of the German boys were avoiding conscription into the Confederate Army, and they didn't want to be, they were avoiding the draft, and their family farms were burned, their families were massacred. A lot of people that left that were part of the Neusses, part of the massacre that you mentioned, were those people trying to avoid the draft, and there's a monument to them in the graveyard in Comfort.
All right, we're going to try and get a quick answer. David, thank you for bringing that up. That brings up the Texas Troubles that led up to the Civil War, the vote for secession. There was a lot of activity which repressed a vote from people who would have voted not for secession.
Your caller is correct. There was an immense amount of violence against these Unionists, German Unionists. A element of Quantrill's raiders who became Confederates were transferred to Kerr County in about late 1862 and through 1864. There were so many persecutions that the Germans, with their crude English language, referred to these Confederates as Der Hanger Band, the Hanging Band. And many a German was persecuted, executed. In fact, by late 1864, the Germans had protested so greatly the abuses that many of these leaders of the Hanger Band fled to Mexico to avoid prosecution after the war was over.
Part of the Civil War you usually don't hear about, a very interesting part of Texas history. Thank you so much, Professor John Huddleston, Professor of History at Shriner University. Thanks for coming in. And we've got more of The Source coming up after this.